Hi, I'm Mark Budd.
And I'm Jair Briggs Davis.
And we're from Mark and Jair Explain Sports.
This is a Tripod production.
The following is a Tripod production. Do not attempt to adjust your dial. Mark Budd and Jair Briggs Davis. Two friends growing up in the Big Apple. Two friends who became sports writers at the top of their craft. Mark, the assistant sports editor at Drexel University's The Triangle. Jair, the color commentator and reporter at Curry College. On their own, they give their own unique insights. However, together, Mark and Jair explain sports.
All right, welcome to episode 4. I'm your host, Mark Budd.
And I'm Jair Briggs Davis.
So Jair, how's it been going, man?
It's been going well. A little bit of more of an upside for me today. I'm hearing the word of Major League Baseball potentially coming back in June. Three divisions, probably with 10 teams in each of them, along with, you know, the NBA supposedly having basketball or, well, having a team facilities reopening on May 8th. So I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get into the baseball later on today. And yeah, for the NBA, I heard that they're possibly going to be playing games in Vegas.
That sounds cool. They're also going to have to be quarantined and all of that. So I think that somehow it's going to work out.
It's going to be really interesting what they do with all the sports teams, even football. Like when it comes back, you have to think that it's going to be without fans, even in September.
Well, without fans is fine, but also you have to think about, you know, players, you know, even by that time, they're going to have to quarantine NFL players too, right? Obviously.
Yeah, they have, yeah. And NFL probably is the worst one because they have to tackle each other. They're in their faces. It's kind of dangerous. The guys spit when they get hit. It's dangerous. But before we get into all that, Jair, today we have a special guest. This is my dad. Hi, Dad.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing all right.
So he's in here to talk about some basketball. So, Jair, I know you have some questions for him. We're going to talk about the documentary, The Last Dance. Jair, you got some questions for my dad?
Oh, yeah. So, Mr. Budd, the word on the block from what I'm hearing on the streets is that you think that Dennis Rodman should not be in the Hall of Fame. Why do you think that?
Well, I think he was definitely a great player, but he was a limited player in what he did, right? And he also, when you go through his whole career, right, obviously when he came into the league, he was not a starter. He was not a star, you know, with the Pistons. He didn't have great years, as I recall, in San Antonio. And he joined a Bulls team that was, already world championship caliber. And he definitely helped them. And he definitely was a catalyst in a couple of the years. But I think that as much as I, you know, enjoyed his play and his hustle and his desire, I just don't think it's Hall of Fame worthy relative to the other guys that are in there. I mean, obviously he couldn't shoot, so it wasn't necessarily a Ben Simmons, I won't shoot. I mean, he couldn't shoot, right? So that is what it is. But he was a tremendous rebounder, and he was an excellent defensive player. So I just think he was limited. That doesn't mean he's not good. I just don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy. But I was wrong, right?
Jerry, what do you think?
I mean, I disagree. I do understand what you're saying, but in a small sense, but at the same time, the accolades. He's a 7-time NBA rebounding champion, NBA All-Defensive second team, 7-time NBA All-Defensive first team, along with two-time defensive player of the year, two-time All-Star, and two-time All-NBA third team, you don't think that those accolades count enough for the Hall of Fame?
No.
And also, like, for a career, 13 rebounds per game is what he averaged.
Pretty good, Dad.
For someone who's, like, 6'6", 6'7", you don't think that that's Hall of Fame worth numbers?
I think he was limited. I mean, his focus, that was his focus, you know, was rebounding. So I have no doubt that other players, if they decided to put away their, you know, their scoring obligations and strictly focus on rebounds, that, you know, they could have certainly upped their stats as well. I mean, I don't know, what was his career average of points? It's probably under 10.
Oh, yeah, it is.
You know, so, you know, again, he definitely important, definitely, you know, significant. But, you know, for a guy that, you know, in his heyday was averaging, you know, 5 or 6 points a game, you know, I don't get it. You know.
You don't buy into the hype.
I don't really get it.
Do you think he got a lot of? Do you think the reason why he's in the Hall of Fame is because he was with Jordan and them?
Well, if he hadn't moved to the Bulls, he definitely, you know, would not have had that publicity and that.
But do you think they could have won without him that many?
Well, they had won without him, right?
But do you think they would have won three in a row like they did with him if they didn't have him?
Well, the thing about at that time was that you can't forget that Michael left in the fall of 93, and then afterwards Scottie Pippen was on his own, and then Horace Grant left, and you can't forget that. So they talk about how, like, when Horace Grant left, it left a hole at power forward for the Bulls.
Yes, and. You know, it did, but and Rodman filled that role. My question is, could there have been other people that could have filled that role other than Rodman? And look, they picked him up.
It was a good move.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I think, you know, he kind of had that same role in San Antonio, right? As I recall, right? He was basically, you know, a rebounding guy, and, you know, without much scoring. The one thing I don't know, which I would be curious about, is what was his plus minus during those years?
Dennis Rodman.
Do you know that?
Ooh. That's actually a good question.
I would imagine with the Bulls, and I don't count his later years because I think wasn't he actually on the Lakers for, mm-hmm. for a period of time?
But he was on the Lakers in 99.
Yeah, but I mean
not like how he was in back in Chicago or Detroit or even San Antonio.
Right. And so I think the fact that he joined the Bulls,
his career plus minus is plus 7.2. And when he was on the Bulls, it was like 15.4 at one point, 6.3. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So but I think that, look, he joined the Bulls. That's where he got the publicity. He was joining two Hall of Fame players there, right? And he's in it. I have to go through and come up. I'm sure if I did a little research, I could probably come up with, several guys who I would think would be more deserving to be in the Hall of Fame.
Can you give me two? Sorry.
No, I can't.
But would you rather have him than Chris Webber in the Hall of Fame?
Would I rather have? Yes, I'd rather have Rodman than Chris.
Chris Webber's in the Hall of Fame too, right?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. He's not.
No, he definitely should not be in the Hall of Fame.
But like they were thinking about putting him in. So.
Well, I mean, you guys will come up right after they've retired for whatever it is, 5 years. But the other thing with Rodman is he was such an enormous distraction that I don't consider that a positive. So the fact that Jordan and Pippen kind of like had to manage that and cover that up, I think there are a lot of guys they could have slid into that role, you know, with those two. And back in that time too, they didn't have the stiffest competition in those later years as to who they were playing, right? It was always a relatively easy trip to the finals for the Bulls, not unlike LeBron and the Cavs, you know, earlier on in the East.
Ooh.
And in the finals, you know, they met kind of a flawed, you know, Utah team, and you know, kind of, you know, managed that. So again, I think I don't think Rodman would have been irreplaceable. I think they could have found, if they needed to, they could have found, you know, somebody else to fill that role, to step in with Jordan and Pippen and play a role without having to have that obligation to score or to take on any leadership role, and to not just be a general clown, which is what he turned out to be, what he turned out to be.
here's another question for you. What do you remember from the 90s Bulls? Like, when, for example, when I talk to my mother about it, she tells me, she's like, oh man, like, it was just a time when it was just Michael Jordan, everything. What do you remember mostly?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you watch the beginning of The Last Dance and the early years with the Bulls, where you know, it was the Pistons and other people in the league, and they were roughing up Michael Jordan. And then he had to go through that period of time where he put on, I don't know, like 15 pounds, right?
Awesome.
In the off season to bulk up, et cetera, et cetera. And so my greatest memory is that turned around really fast, so that if you think LeBron sometimes gets favorable treatment, nobody got favorable treatment like Michael Jordan. He got every foul call imaginable going to the basket. And that's, unfortunately for me, and I was never a Bulls fan and never a Jordan fan. I mean, you know, certainly not to take anything away from his game, but it was really frustrating watching him get every call in a game going to the basket. And, you know, phantom fouls, you know, constantly. I mean, look, I was a Knicks fan, you know, back in those days, and they were a tremendously flawed team. They had basically one player, right? Patrick Ewing and a bunch of other
scrubs,
you know,
John Starks,
guys that were, you know, not that good. So that's my memory, is Jordan making terrific plays and sensational plays, and being bailed out more often than you want to remember, including pushing off on his game-winning shot against Byron Russell and the Jazz. So, and you can go back and take a look at that.
So, Jair, as you can see, my dad is on the LeBron train and not the Michael Jordan train.
I know. I was about to say that. I was about to say that. And I mean, like, hey, look, I'll agree that in Game 6 of 98, I'll say that one was a push-off too.
Yeah, so.
So, Dad, what do you think of the Bad Boy Pistons? Did you think they were wrong when they walked away at the end? And should Michael Jordan still hate Isaiah Thomas?
Oh, look, I'm all for fierce competition and controversy in sports. I never like my team being considered the good sport. that's just me. Walk off. You know, be a bad loser. You know, I think that's fine. I think that's what, you know, breeds the competition. If anything, and you younger guys will hear this more, people get more, from my era, are more concerned with so much camaraderie and guys helping each other up off the court, and they have the same agents and they work out together in the summer and all that nonsense. So I know that's more the way it is today, but to me, give me the, I think you're an asshole. I don't want to, you know, I'm not shaking your hand. You know, you're a crybaby. What? All that stuff is great. I mean, look, there was nothing better than Celtics and Lakers, you know, playoffs. And, you know, some of the best players you know, to me, were the ones that were the most intense.
Jordan was pretty intense.
Jordan, totally. No, Jordan's a killer.
There's no
question about it. It's also different eras too, and there is all this. There's significantly more money involved, and there's more agents involved, and there's more social media, and there's more advertising opportunities and commercials and everything else. So I think that takes the edge off a little bit of people's kind of desperation or their competitive desperation that used to exist, before. And you look, you saw old tapes, guys swinging wildly, throwing punches,
yeah, crazy,
and not getting thrown out of games. So what's good or bad? I don't know. Don't ask me. Look, I stopped watching hockey when fighting stopped. So
what about Isaiah Thomas? Do you think that it was wrong for like the Dream Team or for him to not, do you think it was wrong for him just to not be on a Dream Team, whether they like kicked him off or anything like that?
You know, I understand why. Again, it's the same type of thing. Who's, you know, the politics and who's making the call. But, you know, what I was surprised that Chuck Daly's the coach, right? That he didn't have some influence to get Isaiah on, unless he thought Isaiah was an asshole too. I mean, it's always possible. I don't think so, but I, you know, when it was happening, honestly, I don't, there was probably some discussion, but there wasn't a lot of discussion because, again, most people didn't like Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were a Pistons fan, you did. But most people outside of it, you know, thought he was, you know, kind of a punk, right? Again, terrific player, you know, Hall of Famer, no doubt, but kind of an antagonistic punk, which, you know, I would have loved if he was on my team. But it doesn't surprise me that a bunch of guys would say, we don't, really, do we want to have him around? So,
thank you.
But it wasn't as big a deal because the Dream Team had such
a big,
such personalities and such talent on the team that nobody thought that there was, you know, a void, you know, or that you could use Isaiah Thomas. I mean, look, Christian Laettner was on the team just because he was the college player of the year, and they were going to put whoever that college player of the year was. So it happened to be Laettner. But it wasn't a big deal. I'm sure it was a big deal to Isaiah, but I honestly don't recall it being a big deal to many other people.
I mean, like, I understand. Well, in a sense, I can understand, like, the rest of the Dream Team players not wanting Isaiah on the team. I believe that even Magic didn't want him on the team at that time, and along with Larry Bird. Obviously, Scotty didn't want him, and Jordan, I know, definitely didn't want him. So, I mean, everyone puts it on Jordan, but I think it was just a whole entire team thing.
Yeah, I doubt that that he had any, for lack of a, I doubt that he had any sponsors that were supporting him to get it. Like I say, if Chuck Daly was his coach, as the coach of the Dream Team, you would have thought if he really wanted to influence it, he would have tried. But he may not have been able to do it, or just didn't think it was worthwhile, or, you know, was excited about the opportunity he had anyway.
Well, thanks, Dad, for giving your input on the documentary. We'll definitely be hearing from you again soon in future podcasts.
Thank you. And
thank you for coming in today.
I'll do a little research on who else should be on the Hall of Fame instead of Dennis Rodman.
Well, Jair, there you go. There's the Dennis Rodman argument. I like both of your guys' points, but it's hard to tell because he's already.
Oh, yeah.
So
I could have. Well, I could have added an aspect of the whole entire Larry Bird not wanting Isaiah on the Dream Team, whole entire thing, and Dennis Rodman. He actually would have been included as a part of that issue. But anyways.
So moving on to other sports, we have to get into a little bit of the NFL draft. So Jair, first I'm gonna ask you, what did you think of the draft? Like the whole virtual online, it turned out the draft got the most views of all time, which isn't surprising because there's nothing else to watch. Fans have been desperate to watch sports for the past 3 months. But honestly, in my opinion, I thought they did a good job. What did you think about the whole draft?
I thought that they did a fantastic job. And honestly, though, I thought that Roger Goodell did very well.
I liked how they had the fans. When every time he announced a pick, they had the fans' reactions in the back. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. No, they did very well with it. You know, I got to give it to them. I really have to give it to them. The way of how they started it off from talking about healthcare workers just going on down the list, it was really good. A lot of picks that happened were obvious. Like, for example, we all know Joe Burrow was going first, which was good for him. I saw that the Chargers were thinking of drafting Tua at one point, right?
Yeah, but then the Dolphins kind of sent out smoke screens them and making it look like they were going to take Justin Herbert, who the Chargers ended up taking with the sixth pick, and ultimately the Dolphins decided to choose Tua, which I thought was the good choice.
Yeah. So it worked well for Tua. He got picked high up in the first round still, despite injury. So a lot of people say that the Giants had a bad draft.
I think the Giants, their first pick, selecting Andrew Thomas with the fourth pick, it was not who you expected them to take, but also it wasn't a bad pick because he was a really high-rated prospect, and I think he's a safe pick, and I think that's what the Dave Gettleman, the GM of the Giants, was trying to do. I think they could have gone in other directions, like Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, the linebacker who was like supposed to be the best defensive player in the draft. I thought they could have gone after him, but it's always good to invest in the offensive line. So I don't think that was bad on the Giants' part. And then the rest of their draft, they drafted Xavier McKinney from Alabama, the safety, which they needed help on their defense. But the rest of their picks, they weren't that interesting. But I don't think the Giants did a terrible job. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, you know, Andrew Thomas, he's going to have to definitely protect Daniel Jones. But you know, the Giants are always like up and down, but a lot more down lately. My next question for you is, what's your reaction to how the Philadelphia Eagles did in draft?
Oh man. So I originally was really mad. So they drafted Jalen Reagor from TCU, a small wide receiver who no one predicted that they would take in mock drafts. Everyone in the whole world thought that they were going to, even players in the Eagles thought they were going to draft Justin Jefferson from LSU, who's still on the board. And then when I read that they were taking Reagor, I was like, what the hell? Like, I was so confused. But then, I don't know if I got brainwashed for like the next few days after hearing about it, I was like, all right, maybe this makes sense. He's faster than Jefferson. Maybe he fits in what the Eagles are trying to do. But Jair, I got to be honest with you, what shocked me the most was in day two of the draft, the Eagles decided to draft Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, when they already paid Carson Wentz $100 million in guaranteed, and they decided with a very important pick to choose a quarterback. I don't know why. I know that they're thinking about doing like what the Saints do with Taysom Hill, like Wildcat, using him in running options, but your second pick is very valuable, and they had way more important needs, and they decided to go after a quarterback, which is just like really questionable.
I was thinking about that too myself. I was like, wait a minute, like they already have a quarterback.
Now that they have Jalen Hurts, if you remember, I don't know if you remember, but when the Eagles were in the playoffs this past year against the Seahawks, Carson Wentz went down, and they had to use 39-year-old Josh McCown. So if they had Jalen Hurts in that situation, I think they would have been in a much better situation.
Well, definitely, Mark. You know, Jalen Hurts also has the opportunity to learn from Carson Wentz, and you know he could be a good backup for another couple of years or so, and he could develop regardless.
And also, I'm really curious to see how they use him. I know that they are planning on using him regularly, like in running plays, and maybe he'll play wide out and or like trick wildcat. So it's going to be very interesting what the Eagles offense is going to look like this upcoming season, if we have a season, and how the season plays out is no one has any idea. It's very interesting. So speaking of what no one really, well, the MLB's plan, it seems as the MLB has a plan in place for the upcoming season, but we don't exactly know about it. I know you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show about 10 teams per division, and then there would be three divisions. So can you tell me a little bit about what MLB is thinking about doing?
Well, it would be three divisions, 10 teams in each division. Mark, you're going to have to hear this one. From what I'm seeing, like in the East division, it would be the Orioles, the Red Sox, the Pirates, the Marlins, the Nationals, the Blue Jays, the Tampa Bay Rays, and lastly, these are the last three options. The Phillies, the Mets, and the Yankees.
Wait, so all those teams would be in the same, or the Phillies, so the Phillies, Yankees, and Mets would be one of the last teams, or they all would be in the same division as those?
They would all be in the same division.
Wow.
Along with like the Washington Nationals.
That actually would be fun. I would love that. So that means like the Yankees would play the Mets like at least six times, right?
Yes.
So more.
Oh
so,
no. I'm not sure about the number because we have to remember, you know, how many games are they going to play in the season, and you know also. As we talked about before, options in Arizona, Florida, Texas, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. And we don't even know if like in later, like in a few months, let's say September, like if we're really lucky, who knows, maybe they can even move back to regular ballparks and maybe they could expand it. We don't know.
Yeah, like if they're, I mean, it makes sense if they're going to play in Arizona or California, right? Vegas or Florida, right?
Oh yeah.
It makes sense that they would play there because they could have all the teams together. So I guess it'd be easier to quarantine and like make sure to supervise, because if they decide that, oh, we're gonna have the season as planned in everyone's regular ballpark but no fans, I still think that would be more difficult because you would have to go to 30 different cities. And you'd have to have people monitoring it. It would be a lot better, a lot easier to have it in three different states monitor. So I get where the MLB is coming from.
Yes, and keeping players quarantined and keeping them together. It makes sense. And they're talking about like late June should be a potential start. So, I mean, I'm liking where it's going. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, I believe, and we haven't really heard a lot of motion, and you know, I'm just stressed out, just like, you know, like please tell me some good news. But you know, it's some good news. We're heading in the right direction.
So Jair, what have you been watching? Any like throwback? I know you've been editing Mets highlights, but have you been watching any MLB throwback games?
Last night I was a few weeks ago, and last night I was watching Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS between the Red Sox and the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Roger Clemens starting against Pedro Martinez, and I'm just thinking back, like, you know, damn, I can't be a Red Sox fan. I can't be a Red Sox fan in that situation. Just like, I'd be cringing so hard because Pedro had like 110 plus pitches pitching in like the eighth inning to the Yankees on like their fourth, maybe their third or fourth time going up against them in the batter's box. Like,
I know you have a photographic memory when it comes to baseball, remembering scores and what year this happened. So did before, what, when you turned on last night's game, did you know the exact score of what was going to happen?
Well, it was the Yankees won 6-5 in that game. That was the Aaron Boone game.
So did you know that before, or did you have to like read that? That's what it was.
Oh no, I knew that one from way before. Wow. Knew that one from way before. You can't forget that was a series when Don Zimmer was thrown down by Pedro. That was a series. That one was that was game 3 in Boston, actually. I mean, Jason Giambi, he had 2 home runs against Pedro in that game, and I remember I'll remember vividly, like, you know, the like Joe Buck and the announcers on Fox talking about David Wells coming out of the bullpen. Yankees used 3 starters in that game, Mark. It was Clemens, Mussina, and Wells. And when Wells came in, the Yankees were having a slight comeback, and at the time it was 4-2, I believe, and that's when David Ortiz came up to the plate. First pitch, breaking ball, launches it to right field, and it was 5-2 at that point. But then afterwards, that's when the Yankees came back against Pedro, and that's when Grady Little, I feel, should have taken him out. But yeah, Mark, I'm watching different throwback games.
Yeah,
I was looking up different things. I was last night. I was on YouTube. I was watching some of the 2006 Mets against the Dodgers, and I look at the Dodgers. I was like, oh my goodness, how many, like, in 2006? I was like, how many former Yankee, Red Sox players from like 03, 04 were playing for the Dodgers were like a member of the Dodgers at this point. Grady Little was managing in 06, and he had Nomar. He had Derek Lowe, who pitched game 7 of the 2004 ALCS, and Derek Lowe started at Chase Stadium. And yeah, and I think Brad Penny was on that team, and Bill Mueller was a member of the Dodgers.
Yeah, man.
So Mark, enough about me. What about you? What are you excited for mostly in baseball?
What am I excited for? Well, I'm excited to see the Phillies this year. I think they're going to be better than last year. I think Bryce Harper's going to have a breakout year, but I also am really excited to see the Yankees with Gerrit Cole. They're going to be dominant. So it's just, but I feel like because it's such a long break, I know I mentioned this a few weeks ago, there's definitely going to be some team that no one expected to be good, and they are going to be good and make a deep playoff run, because that seems to always happen in baseball. But Jay, what I did want to get into today a little bit before we finish is before we started talking today, I saw that the NCAA is highly considering a proposal that would allow college athletes to sign endorsement contracts and receive payment for other work. But it would have to be that the schools they go to aren't involved in any of the payments. So it wouldn't be the schools paying them, but they could make money off their popularity. What do you think of it? I think that's great, especially with I'm pretty sure you've heard about this, but top high school basketball prospects have been deciding not to go to college and instead going to the G League, where they get paid as much as $500,000 to learn from professional coaches and play against professionals. So what do you think? I think that the NCAA had to do this because they're clearly losing top talent to things like the G League. And if they didn't do this, I think it would be a big issue. What do you think?
I mean, Mark, I agree with you on that one. Let me just add this. Imagine if so many basketball players from many years ago, like Michael Jordan or maybe Patrick Ewing, were getting endorsement deals back when they were in college. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
But
Zion Williamson signed – as soon as he got out of Duke, he signed like a $75 million contract with Jordan. He's getting paid like over $10 million a year. Like, that's crazy. Like, a guy our age is getting that kind of money. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, the NCAA already had to do this. You know, it's been a topic for years about college players signing endorsement deals. There's so much politics involved with it. I think that the NCAA is making a I think that the NCAA is really smart for considering it, and I think that they should allow it. It's going to help, and it's going to help out their brand.
This is especially, I think this is especially good for, while it's good for all college players and the top prospects, I think this is especially good for really good college players that are popular in their sport and get a lot of recognition, but don't become big in the pros where they don't get to cash out on their money. This gives them the opportunity to make the money that they potentially can't make professionally before they start on with their lives. So I think it's great for guys.
Can I give you one example of a guy who actually like skipped college and is actually like, you know, and is still ready to go into the NBA who actually just declared for the draft?
Yes.
LaMelo Ball. Look at what happened to him.
Yeah.
He's a partial owner of the Illawarra Hawks, I believe, back in Australia.
That's crazy. And then he just signed with Jay-Z's Rock Nation sports agency. So clearly, Jair, before we end, I just want to say, I think that this is, while quarantine and the coronavirus, it sucks, we finally have more sports to talk about now with the draft and the Last Dance. It seems like there's all of a sudden more hope. And like with all these, with like the NBA, the practice facilities are opening, it sounds like maybe good things are coming.
It sounds like it too, Mark. It really does. And I hope that everything keeps coming, and I hope that things just don't fall through the cracks, you know.
I'm excited for next week, what sports news will come up, and we'll obviously talk about the documentary episodes 5 and 6. And I want to give a shout out to Tay on the Track for our opening sound. We love it.
Thank you so much.
Got a lot of positive feedback. And don't forget to follow our account on social media. It's at EX Sports Drexel. So I'm your host, Mark Budd.
Jair Brooks-Davis here.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.
To listen to more Tripod Productions, go to thetriangle.org/podcasts.